So let's chat now a bit about the opposite you'll be directing here. Of the two, of Johnny Skeeky and the Florentine Tragedy by Zimlinsky, I think obviously the Zimlinsky is going to be a little bit less familiar to some of our listeners.
Right.
So I'm just curious, what is it about this piece that fascinates you? What you've gotten to know it now, I imagine, quite well.
Yes, indeed. I didn't know it well when it was offered in a double bill package, an exciting package that was offered to me by Alexander Neef. I think it's wonderful that COC has a leader like Alexander Neef, who really gauges what he can get from his directors, mm-hmm. and somehow knows that he has to figure out what is a good project for this particular person. And I didn't know exactly why this double bill appealed to him to offer to me. I actually have never asked him that question. You ought to ask him that question, you know, and find out. Because I'm sure he had a raison d'etre, to be specific, for asking me to do this. I think I'm fascinated by the whole project, and I'll tell you about Florentine Tragedy in a moment, mm-hmm. but I'm fascinated by several things. First of all, I'm fascinated by the fact that these two pieces are written really within a couple of years of each other. That's really amazing. I mean, they were premiered within a year of each other, but they were written, you know, 15, 16, and then 17 for Florentine Tragedy, 15, 16 for...
The other way around.
Florentine Tragedy, 15, 16, 17, 1917, for the Skeeky. So Skeeky was actually more modern in a way than Florentine, exactly by a year. And there are very adventurous and interesting usages of dissonance in both pieces, mm-hmm. in orchestral terms. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the language of the Zimlinsky may seem more modern than Puccini, but for Puccini, this was actually a huge step towards even the idea of bitonality and dissonance and so on. Therefore, that fascinated me right away, just the juxtaposition and neighborliness of these two pieces with very, very different sounds, but still coming pretty much from a lot of the same impulses in life. What's fascinating is that both of these pieces are written in that time period against the backdrop of World War I, but they look back to the Renaissance. Why? Because the Renaissance is a time that represented the highest ideals for humankind,
right. The
greatest variety of intellectual pursuit, the sciences, literature, everything exploded in the Renaissance. And when we call somebody a Renaissance person, mm-hmm. we mean it as a highest degree of compliment, you know, because to strive for the ideals of the Renaissance is something that we all strive to be, multifaceted in our abilities. A Da Vinci, Michelangelo, who could not only just draw and paint, but they also wrote, you know, literature. They were interested in science, you know. So these pieces also represent that spirit. And I'm very glad that we didn't put it in the Renaissance period, because then it's just about the Renaissance. But it's compositionally about the new world that was going to be created after the World War I, the modern world mm-hmm. that was going mm-hmm. to come into being. Mm-hmm. And these pieces of music are really ushering in the new world. And we have people in these pieces, the protagonist who's going to be sung in both cases by Alan Held. We have Simone in one, and then we have Johnny Skeeky in the other. And this fellow is really a prototype for the new man of the 20th century. The Renaissance man.
Right.
And he was the new man in the Renaissance time as well. Mm-hmm. And the people around him, in both situations, for instance, we are dealing with autocrats and the old ways versus the new way, you know. So we have characters like Guido in one case, in the Zemlinsky, in the Skiki. We have the family, which is an old,
you know, old money,
somewhat related to what they consider royalty, you know. And the new way is to abolish it. And that's what happened also after World War One.
Right.
All of that was abolished, you know, and it was about the worker, about the man who was wily and could think on his feet and be the wheeler dealer. And of course, we've taken it to an extreme place in modern times, and it can be a dangerous place too. So that's what we wanted to see, is that trajectory from Renaissance to modern times, how they really relate. So in that light, I find the Zemlinsky piece, The Florentine Tragedy, really much more than just a kind of, I refer to Pinter as being a kind of reference point for this triangular drama, the love triangle. But that's only one aspect of it, because the bigger aspect of it is really the sort of the fight between the new way and the old way. Guido, the old patriarchal royal descendant, and the new man, who's the self-made man, you know, Simone.
Has to make his own way in the world.
Has to make, is the businessman,
which
is what we have today, the businessman, the merchant, the one who sells himself and doesn't rely on his lineage, doesn't rely on his family's money or anything like that. Which really engenders a person in the character of Guido, who is so entitled that he doesn't really have his finger on the pulse of the time, has no idea of what's going on around him, even to the point that he's unaware of the danger, the trap he's in in this evening, and what tragedy is going to befall him. So on a metaphorical scale, for me, it's fabulous, because it's got a personal drama aspect to it, but it's got a huge drama of history around it, you know. And Simone spouts off a lot about history. And I think it's fascinating what he says. If you really read everything he says, it's quite amazing. He's the brain in this group, you know. She's the, Bianca is the beautiful one, and everything, and also Renaissance, one of the ideals was beauty, and she sort of represents that high ideal of beauty, the muse, as in Dante's also had a muse in his life, Beatrice, Beatrice. So the muse, who, the woman behind the man who goes out there in the world, there's always a woman behind the man, or, you know. So it's a fascinating mix of ideas, very relevant, I think, to modern audiences. On the musical side, I just think the music is glorious. It's super saturated with romanticism and sensuality. The whole piece reeks of a highly erotic sensuality, because it's also dealing with eroticism and the whole idea of fidelity and forbidden love, fidelity versus forbidden love, which all of us have to deal with in life. You know, we decide to be married to somebody, but it doesn't mean that our attractions to other people don't happen, or the thought or the imagination to experience forbidden love after years of marriage, you know, come crashing into our conscious. And this story deals with that, and how sometimes a marriage has to go to extreme places to revive, to bring a renaissance into the marriage.
We don't want to give it all away, but
bring it all alive again. And we know by the end of the opera, because some of the music at the end is exquisitely, it's totally exquisite, you know. And the two of them discovering again, for him to discover her beauty, for her to discover how strong he is, you know, the aphrodisiac of beauty and strength
right.
coming together
yeah.
is something that, even though the way they get there is rather strange and kind of shocking, but only in the sense that if you know Oscar Wilde, this is
mm-hmm.
this is quite typical for Oscar Wilde in the way we understand Zalome.
Right.
Yeah. So it has a really extremely shocking quality to it, but nothing more so than, let's say, our Hitchcock thrillers that we love so much. And it's exciting from that point of view because it's a what's going to happen kind of a situation. Same thing in Skeeky, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing, you know. I know a lot more people know Skeeky, but how we get there, maybe they know the outline of it, but I'm hoping to expose more about these characters
mm-hmm.
and the means and the way we get to the result that everybody knows what it's how it's going
right.
to end, you know. Keep them on their toes a little bit, you know.
Well, we'd love to listen to some music from these operas.
Absolutely. I certainly think that Rinuccio's aria should be featured.
Yeah.
Avete torto, where he speaks about the history and the greatness of Florence in the buildings themselves, and he mentions the buildings, you know, that are the great achievements of the architects and the sculptors and so forth. But then he talks about the spirit that of Florence, of the Florentine person embodied in someone like Johnny Skeeky, who's going to actually lead us Florentines with our great history behind us
right.
into the future.
So Rinuccio kind of has a foot in both worlds.
Rinuccio is
you know?
Actually the biggest wheeler dealer here.
Right.
He is the one who is really, you can see he's a young Johnny Skeeky in the making.
Right.
He's learning from a master.
Verna Shaker.
Con man, in a way. And he has his foot in the old world.
Right.
So, but that's the best way to be
for
a con person because you have to know the people
you're dealing with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So he's a young Johnny Skeeky in the making.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And of course he's in love with the daughter.
Mm-hmm.
But I bet you anything that he's in love with the daughter partly because he also loves Skeeky
yeah.
and wants to learn more at his feet.
Right.
I'm sure. I think it's very important to hear his aria. He ends the aria with the words,
Johnny
Skeeky.
We'll listen to Rinuccio's aria, Firenze come un albero fiorito, sung by Roberto Alagna, with Bruno Bartoletti conducting the orchestra and chorus of the Maggio Musicale Fiorentino.
Firenze come un albero fiorito, che in piazza dei signori a tronco e fronte. Coi ripicchi
And then we have Lauretta's aria, of course, O Mio Babbino Caro, which everybody knows that aria, whether they know that it comes from Gianni Schicchi or not.
Well, this will give them a chance to hear it in context, obviously, when they see the opera. So often it seems to be performed, you know, just by itself, and people just think it's this lovely melody, but she's being quite crafty, you know.
She actually is also the sort of female version of, I mean, after all, she was trained by her father. Even though he sends her away so to preserve some of modicum of her innocence to the whole scheme, we know that she's, I know Dad's up to something really good.
Right.
And she tries to find a way to keep coming back to see if she can hear what's going on. No, she's crafty.
Mm-hmm.
She's very crafty. And she's very, I think, also smart in the modern way, too.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing, too, that Rinuccio is somewhat like Dad and going to be a smart young man who's going to be the spitting image of her dad. Obviously, she adores her father.
Right.
They have a very close relationship. But her aria is one of the craftiest, wiliest, emotional tapping into just knowing how to play her dad.
Exactly.
You know, and it's fabulous, a fabulous piece. But it is like a favorite piece. I can tell you that it was the piece I auditioned to get into the High School of Music and Art. I learned O Mio Babbino Caro. It's something that everybody puts on as an encore.
Right.
I've sung it dozens of times without having been on the stage doing Lauretta.
Let's listen to Lauretta's aria, O Mio Babbino Caro, sung by Mirella Freni, with Bruno Bartoletti conducting the Maggio Musicale Fiorentino Orchestra and Chorus.
A really beautiful, tuneful melodious moment is the trio of the three ladies, Nella, Cesca, and Zita, when they're dressing Schicchi, when he is going to be the impersonator of the dead Buozzo Donati to change the will. So he's a falsifier and an impersonator.
We'll listen to the trio sung by Eva Podlesch, Nicoletta Curiel, and Barbara Frittoli.
Thank you.
And then there's the big love duet at the end, Lauretta Mia, which again, the whole justification that Johnny Skeeky presents to us at the end is, what better usage of this horrible family's wealth, you know, than to use it for these two wonderful people. He's actually using the wealth for Rinuccio, who is a part of the family, but he's also helping his own family, right, of course. So we hear that those themes throughout, but that's the culminating point, and it's not only the beauty of that love, but the beauty against the background of Bella Firenze, the gorgeous city of Firenze, that when you go there today, Firenze is still very much like it was in Renaissance times.
And let's listen now to Rinuccio and Lauretta's final duet from Gianni Schicchi, sung by Roberto Alagna and Loretta Freni.
And if you want something from Mr. Skeeky himself, it's the moment when he realizes what he can do. Mm-hmm. And he calls them a bunch of idiots. Ake zucconi and si corre dal notaio. Run quickly to the lawyer, the notary. Bring him here. This is what we're going to do. And it's an extremely interesting clip. Goes all the way up until... They start screaming, Skeeky, Skeeky, that whole area. He describes what is going to happen. Oh, yeah, and it's in musical terms, it describes his character, his ability to think on his feet and be wily and dream up a whole scheme, which is happening like that.
And let's listen to that section of the opera now with Leonucci singing Gianni Skeeky.
Che zucconi! Si corre dal notaio, messer notaio, presto! Via da Boso Donati c'è un gran peggioramento, vuol fare testamento. Portate su con voi le pergamene, presto messer, se no è tardi. Ed il notaio viene. Entra, la stanza è semioscura, dentro il letto intravede di poso la figura. In testa la cappella, al viso la pezzo di la fra cappellina e pezzolina un naso che per quello di Boso è invece il nido.